Ninja Gaiden 2, The Dark Sword of Chaos. Welcome to Nostalgia, a chronological exploration of every NES game released in North America. I'm Mike.
I'm Sean.
And I'm Joe.
Ninja Gaiden 2, The Dark Sword of Chaos, has all the makings of a Hollywood-style sequel, with the interesting yet vague subtitle underneath the original game. The cool poster, I don't know if you guys saw the art for Ninja Gaiden 2, but it has like, you know, prolific character, front and center, awesome text, giant dragon behind him.
I can only
him.
Imagine, honestly, with how the art style of this game.
And then there's also, like, you know, there's the hype factor, right? Like, Ninja Gaiden, we all love that game, right? We all still love that game?
I did enjoy that game.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't played it in a long time, but I still think I love that game based on what I remember.
Now, we recorded Ninja Gaiden, because it's funny, Joe saying, as we remember, we recorded that as, like, episode 170, which was, geez, I can't even, is that, like, 2020, 2021? But it's really only been a year and 2 months between the release of Ninja Gaiden and Ninja Gaiden 2. So even though it feels long for us, because we play every single game, for players, you know, in real time, it wasn't that long of a wait for this sequel. So it's Ninja Gaiden is fresh in their mind. I'm wondering how you guys remember or think of Ninja Gaiden before going into Ninja Gaiden 2. Were you expecting, you know, we've had sequels where they just completely changed the game, right? Ninja Gaiden 2 could have been an RPG, or, you know, something where a puzzle style game, who knows what it could have been. It happens to just closely follow the format of Ninja Gaiden, but as we saw with Castlevania, you can't always just expect that.
Well, joking aside, I feel like normally when we have a sequel or something, like, even if we just played the game 6 months ago, I'm like, man, I don't remember that game. We play so many games, I just have a terrible memory. But Ninja Gaiden had the exact opposite effect for me, though, because I was like, so I was actually, I wanted to remember, like, what did we all say? Was it, you know, did everybody vote it essential and whatnot? So I went back to look at the that episode, and I couldn't believe how long ago it was, because that one is the only one ever that feels like that was way more recent than it actually was. Like, you know, I'm joking there, like, oh, like, how much I remember, but, like, yeah, there are things I forgot, but, like, I do remember that, like, so much more than a lot of other games, or at least, like, the main gameplay style and, like, the feel I got from it, and obviously, like, the crazy cutscenes and all that. So I was just surprised at how recent it was, or how not recent it was, and it still felt recent.
Yeah, from what I remember, I really dug the presentation. I enjoyed the feel of the character. I want to say that it probably feels exactly the same, like, in terms of, like, character movement and all that. But that if I were a responsible podcaster, I would have gone back and at least played a level or two just to refresh my memory, but I'm not that.
Well, without getting into any of the new features, right, you have to add stuff to a second game. You can't just, well, some games do it. They just say, like, now with more levels, right? I think in one of our sequels and spinoff sections, I think it was for Lode Runner, it was just filled with games where it was like, yeah, same exact controls, but we added 48 new Lode Runner levels for you. That, you know, you don't usually get away with that, and Ninja Gaiden 2 wasn't going to try that, but yeah, it is basically, you're right, Sean, it is Ninja Gaiden 1 with new abilities and new gimmicks on the levels, and obviously a whole new story, but it's not like they didn't change even the sprite, right? Like, it's not like we saw a size change or a layout change or the way that Ryu controls. The one big change is that in Ninja Gaiden 1, yeah, you could latch onto the walls and kind of jump from wall to wall, but you only could hang in your place. You couldn't you couldn't climb up and down. Yeah, now you can actually climb up and down these walls. And, you know, that's like, is that a selling point? Like, that's something to talk about in this episode and feels unique. But do you think when they were making this game, they were like, yeah, we got to throw that like as the marketing, like now you can climb the walls. It just feels like an obvious, like when you go back to the first one, you're like, huh, can't believe you couldn't climb these walls.
Well, it does give you a bit more of like a feeling of freedom of movement and you actually having like a direct relationship with this character. I would imagine that if I had remembered that you couldn't climb up the walls in the first one. But I would have found it a big plus.
Yeah, and I have a lot of thoughts about like about the general feeling that I feel like most people, sometimes including myself, have about game sequels that don't do a ton to change up their formula. Like, I think that there is a place for that, and I guess I feel like that place occurs more often than I think most people believe. You know, I'm saying my opinion is that there's more room for that than I think most people feel like there's room for. Because, like, you know, I've talked about this about Pokemon before, where, like, a lot of people are like, well, when are they going to change the formula? And, like, I'm just perfectly okay with, like, hey, take this form that I love, add some new Pokemon, put me in a new region, but, like, you don't have to change the formula. And more recently, Spider-Man 2 on the, or whatever, yeah, I guess it's Spider-Man 2 on the PS5. A lot of people were complaining where it's like, well, you know, don't expect this to be like some big formula changing thing. It was like, that was a great formula. And they added some nice new things. They added a couple new things and it was a great new story. And like, I'm happy to get like a sequel like that, that like didn't try too much to change it. Cause a lot of times they try to change things and I'm like, well, this isn't as good anymore. Or it's like, not even that it's not as good, but it's like, it's not what I was looking for. I'm not saying that like, that's always the case. There are plenty of times where like, okay, this has gotten stale or like you didn't do anything, but like, I think that we'll probably get into it, I'm sure, but, like, there are a lot of instances in Ninja Gaiden 2 where I think it walks the line really well. Like, one being able to climb up those things, the walls, rather than just jump on it, where it doesn't completely change the formula, just adds a little bit more nuance and just gives you, like, hey, it's another chance to use a couple more tools to explore this world or to spend time in this game or a similar game.
Joe, you mentioned Spider-Man 2, which is definitely more recent in gaming history, but also, recently on this show, I feel like Adventures of Lolo 2, you made the same defense there, maybe the lone defender, of saying, like, hey, it's totally fine that they didn't, like, give Lolo, like, some new power that made it a new way to solve puzzles. It was totally fine to just say, like, yep, first game had a great puzzle-solving mechanic, and now we're throwing more puzzles at you. Obviously, two totally different games, but it's not unheard of, and I think, especially when you go back and listen to our comments on the first Ninja Gaiden, we had basically no complaints about Ryu's controls and thought it was the best part of the game. So why screw that up, right? Like, why change how he jumps or how he attacks, right? Or, like, I don't think that that's where you need to make the adjustments. And so if the game starts off and it feels familiar, for a game that's on the Essential Games list, that's a plus, right?
Yeah, I mean, like, the when a game really feels like it nails its formula, and when sequels come out, like, you kind of want them to be iterative, and mostly they are. Like, a good example of this that I was thinking of when you guys were talking was, like, Tony Hawk. Like, the first one came out, it's pretty bare bones, but, like, the formula's there. Every time it releases a new one, like Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2, now you can, combos are easier. I don't remember exactly how. Maybe it's because you can manual out of tricks now, but, like, then in 3, like, then they introduced the revert, so now you can get, like, these super cool combos. But the game from 1 to 3 is exactly the same, plus or minus a couple different, like, move concepts. And I think that in games that rely a lot on their, like, on, like, that core gameplay loop, that's really all you need is just something additive, something minutely additive sometimes. And it seems that that might be what we're seeing here.
Yeah, and, like, with something like Tony Hawk, too, it is almost the same except for those little additive things, but also you are taking that formula and you're exploring new, you know, skate parks and you're exploring new areas to do. It's like, you get that thing that you love doing and you get to go explore somewhere else with it. Like, that's a totally fine way to make a sequel. You know, I even think about, like, just games that I talk about all the time, like Kingdom Hearts. Love Kingdom Hearts. And, like, if you take Kingdom Hearts 1, you take exactly that engine, exactly that thing, and you just, like, put new worlds and gave me new stories to explore, like, I'm happy, you know, rather than, like, changing it so much that I'm like, okay, it's the same characters, but this feels like a different game now. You know, I mean, both can be good, but I'm just saying, like, I guess my whole initial point is that, like, it's not an immediate negative to me to be like, well, they didn't really change that much in, like, the formula.
And climbing the walls may be obvious and unmarketable, in my opinion, but you can't ignore something like being able to clone yourself and have those clones run around screen and perform the same actions as you. That is a completely marketable, totally unique, I've never seen this in an NES game yet. This is awesome. This is the cutting edge feature, the sellable feature of this game, the thing that makes it worthy of the Ninja Gaiden 2. In fact, it'd be cool if you were only able to split your body once and the 2 was in reference to the 2 Ryus, but save the third split for the third game. This is definitely the thing that probably warrants its own section, so let's have it out here. Essentially, there is a power-up that you collect that allows Ryu to, I believe the game describes it as split his body, so it's not like a shadow version of himself or whatever, it's just another clone, and this clone just mimics all of your inputs, including wherever you walk to, whenever you attack. And so, it's a skill barrier, I want to say, on the player to make these clones useful, because they either can just be something that's constantly behind you, always lagging behind and not to your benefit, or they can be something that you thoughtfully choose to put first and keep yourself out of harm's way to allow the clones to do the grunt work. Probably requires a little more time and effort and thinking, but the payoff is ultimately worth it. Sean, what did you think of the attack of the clones?
Yeah, my first thought was that they're a little jank. I think that the fact that, and that also makes it feel a bit more reactive and less like, because we've played games where you control more than one thing, but they're usually like moving in formation and it's very rigid and it's like two people holding a stick, so like they can't get any closer or farther away, and it's useful but it doesn't really feel like revolutionary. In this one, like, I don't know if they just have different inputs, like that reacting differently, like, so it's always going to lag behind you and do exactly what you did however many, like, ticks prior. But sometimes, like, the jump is sort of out of sync, and when you attack, it's definitely exactly when you attack, so you're sort of attacking in concert there. But there's just enough, like, smushiness to make it feel like something you really have to learn and get the feel for. So I like it. I can't say that I was always very good at it. There were a couple aha moments during some bosses that were really, really annoying, I just sort of lucked my way into kind of stun locking the boss, because it would retreat to safety where I just so happened to have one of my doppelgangers planted. And it's kind of hard to set up because you've got so many things flying at you and everything gives you so much knockback, but that's conversation for another time. So yeah, I like the concept. I can't say that it's a perfect execution, but yeah, it's cool.
Yeah, I felt like it had its moments where it was like, this is where it's really valuable. The one that stands out to me is a boss kind of early on. I think it's like maybe the third or fourth boss, that like flies kind of overhead back and forth.
That's the
and
you one.
have to hit it to get him to come down, and then, you know, you have to hit it in the air basically. But like, yeah, my strategy just became after a while, I'm like, I don't know how I would have done this if I didn't have the power up where I had, you know, one or two guys behind me, but I would jump in the air and land while leaving one of my other guys up in the air, because they're not moving based on like the time you were there. They're moving based on like how far away from that moment you are. That makes any sense. So it's like, you stand still, they'll also stand still in the air behind you where you were. And then I'm then waiting until the boss gets near, hitting him with that guy, then getting out of the way and like going immediately to jump and set up another guy in the air for when like the time comes that he's going to be in the air on that side. And that one, like, actually to me started to feel like, wow, like I'm doing this. It's not like an accident. But like most of the other time I was using those guys, it was like, I'm just fighting as Ryu and I'll probably get some lucky hits in with these other guys that are swinging around behind me too. That was like my main strategy with those guys.
Another value that they have that's a bit more apparent and easy to just immediately take advantage of is the stacking potential of your other power-ups, where something that might not be entirely useful at first now is just this kind of huge area of effect attack that's coming out of any duplicate that you have. So it also plays well there.
It's definitely something that looks cooler than it performs in game. I think there's no doubt about that, that it's surprising when it first happens and you realize you have control over these Shadow Ryus. However, pulling it off in the game to great effect does take the kind of maneuvering that Joe was mentioning, where you kind of need to get it in the right place for it to be useful and hope to park it there in a way. Otherwise, they do wind up just kind of running about the screen and nonsensically sometimes hitting things for you. The trouble with the clones, though, is that the game isn't treating them like a ability that Ryu always has and kind of like a metered thing that he can control but, deplete over time. It's treating it as a collectible like any other power-up that, if you die, will go away. And so later on in this game, just like the first Ninja Gaiden, this game gets incredibly difficult later on, but in a way that I almost feel like it expected you to have those clones to be able to take on these bosses, just given how large their spread of fire is, and avoiding them is damn near impossible. Like, to do it on your own, I couldn't fathom. So the issue becomes almost shmup-like.
Yeah. The Gradius paradox.
Yes, exactly. Like, if you die and you lose all your power-ups and you lose all your clones in this Ninja Gaiden game, you're suddenly a lot, you know, you're in a worse-off situation because you're in a lot more trouble now that you are basically going to die earlier because there's a lot more that you can't deal with. I think being able to bring the clones into a situation, not just the boss fights, but being able to think about how to use them to dodge enemy attacks is where they excel best. And so I really think they should have included this as a Ryu default ability, and again, something that's depletable instead of something that is acquired through the level, just like your Ninja Stars or your Fire Wheel, etc.
Yeah, I agree. This really is a hard game. I don't remember how, because I know that Ninja Gaiden as a series is known as being hard games, but I can't remember how much of an impact that had on our episode for the first one. But I really felt it here. Like, I was getting actually frustrated at times, not even against bosses, but just in the scope of the normal gameplay and navigating these levels and just getting stuck and realizing that, like, I'm just bashing my head against a wall. I need to go a little slower, or not slower, but more methodical. And yeah, I did definitely, I definitely felt the punishment in this game.
Yeah. It felt to me like a game, like a lot of NES games that you really have to like learn, but like not in the way where you have to like learn and memorize the stage. You have to like learn a lot of like enemy behaviors and or I guess defenses against certain enemies. Like there were certain people that would just kill me over and over again. As soon as I would see like one of those big guys with their swords like held out running at me, I'd be like, I just like don't even know how to avoid those guys, and I'd have to like literally sit, stop, and like make a point to be like, okay, I gotta literally just spend this level just figuring out, like, how do I deal with these guys, you know? And then, like, slowly, you know, I didn't beat this game. I got maybe halfway through. So, like, you know, given more time, I feel like I would, like, slowly, you know, as I'm saying this, this just sounds so obvious. This is, like, literally how anyone does anything. But, like, yeah, get better at it as I learned. but like... You know, it's like, it. I guess it's just like the enemies aren't just like, oh, a different sprite and like they're doing different damage. Like they do have these behaviors that I felt like I needed to not memorize when they're going to come or the layout, but like memorize like, okay, so if I see this guy, I got to react this way or I got to be quick and get out of the way, get behind him or, you know, whatever.
Yeah, there were, I felt that there were times where I was actually fighting the levels themselves. Like it was never really about the enemies. It was about the geometry and my biggest peeve, and I know I'm getting a little off topic here, my biggest peeve with this game, at least in its level design, is that there are some ledges that are not meant to be hopped. That there are some where you can climb to just below where you think that you could do like a little like midair jump over, and you just never will, and I just like would, I would just like a moth to a flame get stuck there, trying and trying to get over it, and these little like flames that slowly home towards you are just swarming me, and the other enemies are jumping around. I'm getting knocked around back and forth, and it actually felt like hell. But I think that's just because I wasn't playing the game correctly.
Well, I mean, I think I had the exact same experience, and just to be clear, to make sure we're talking about the same thing. You're saying, like, when you climb out, you grab onto a wall, you climb to the top, and you think you should be able to jump up onto the top and start walking, and it's like, nope, you cannot go any higher than this. Like, even though you can see the top right there, and any person that could climb a wall should be able to pull themselves up to the top of the wall. But yeah, that happened to me a million times, too, and that was very, very frustrating.
But they're, like, designed to not be, like, those are not places that you can move on from. Like, you're supposed to turn around or find a different route.
But there were some times where I felt like, or I thought that you did have to get up on top of there, but it was like...
I always felt like I did, yeah.
No, but I think there were times where it ended up that I did have to get up on there, but it's like you couldn't just climb up there. You'd have to climb up there and then jump somewhere else to get higher so you can jump onto it from above or something. And, like, fine, like, that's fine if that's the gameplay mechanic, but to me it was just like... Because it looks like the other ledges that I can just jump up on, and there's no contextual reason I shouldn't be able to. Like, it felt like it got puzzly in a way that, like, I wasn't prepared for a puzzle and wasn't expecting a puzzle. So, like, that made it frustrating where I'm like, I know that, like, there should just be an easy way to get here, and I can't figure it out because it's not clear. Like,
the weirdest part about the ability to latch onto and now scale the walls is, like, in the first game, if you, you know, grabbed onto a wall but not in the correct spot, you were almost, like, willing to accept the death or the, you know, the need to go backwards because it was like, oh, I just didn't grab it from the right point. But now that you can scale up them, it feels like, specifically the pitfall ones, the ones where you have successfully dodged the pitfall but have grabbed onto the part of the wall that still sort of means death, but requires you to jump to your death, like acknowledging that, like, yeah, you thought you saved yourself, but you're just going to have to die. No two ways about it. It's like, it's even worse. It's a worse payoff than just falling in the pit because you thought you saved yourself only to find out there's nothing you can do about the situation, to Joe's point of, shouldn't I just be able to pull myself up? Like, I don't have the upper body strength.
I know
that
it's like a different, like, that there is a skill and it's a part of the gameplay to, like, to, you know, jump from wall to wall and I guess having there be an animation of you just going over the ledge sort of removes from that. But I think in certain situations, I think it's more of a pro than a con to just, like, be able to climb up the corner,
yeah,
and onto the platform.
Yeah, and there are still plenty of other reasons that you could do that jump from wall to wall thing, and you could need that. Like, it doesn't need to be, like, you've locked me out of a simple skill, so you don't have to manufacture me jumping from wall to wall. I'm going to jump from wall to wall to get higher, but to get to places I couldn't otherwise reach anyways. So, like, yeah. I had a similar complaint, actually, that... kind of the opposite. When I'm climbing down walls, sometimes like I'm climbing down something that like leads into a new area below. And like, yeah, if you fall down there, it's death, which like understandable, you fell. But like, so sometimes you climb down and you get to the bottom, you touch the bottom and it like loads a new area below and you keep climbing down. But then like sometimes you can climb down and you get to the bottom and it's like, no, that was a pit. You died. But I'm like, well, how do I know? And I think like, as
there's
I'm
a ladder
right now,
texture.
Yeah. I think there's like, yeah, there's a texture that like gives it, but like at first I didn't know. So I was just like getting annoyed with that. I'm like, all right, maybe I climbed down here. I just touched the bottom and it was like, wah, wah.
I did do that too though. Yeah.
Sean, you were mentioning the levels and perhaps describing the claustrophobic parts of the later levels, especially with all the spikes and narrow entryways with enemies. But there's also the introduction of dynamic environments that Ninja Gaiden 1 was free of. In Ninja Gaiden 2, there's a moving train level. There's a level where the wind kind of changes directions. There's an ice level. And, you know, again, this is the kind of stuff that you add to plus up or to justify a sequel. The only complaint, you know, I hate to start with a complaint because I'm sure we can talk about good things for these dynamic environments, but they don't work with Ryu. They just kind of exist at the same time as him. And I feel like a good game like a Super Mario Brothers creates a whole world where, like, you know, there's something about the land that Mario runs on that changes the platforming aspect of it. And instead, in Ninja Gaiden 2, it's like, well, the ice level now is just like everything's slippery and it sucks more. Like, you know, if you had a hard time controlling Ryu before this, like, you're really gonna hate it in the ice level. Or with the wind changing, it's like, well, you better just be more patient and wait for it to change in the direction you need. It's like, it's not really like enhancing. There's never it's only a hindrance to the player character. It's never like to their benefit or to pull off some really cool thing.
I'd say that the only one that kind of does what you're talking about is actually the wind level, because there are times where you're going with the wind and finally it feels like, you know, you're getting a little bit of some grace from this game. But then, you know, 15 seconds later, you're fighting against it. The rest of them, yeah, exactly. Like, they're kind of, they exist separate from yourself. There's the one where, actually at the beginning, I was like, oh, that's really cool. It's like, not dynamic lighting, but like, there's like a thunderstorm going on and the level keeps getting brighter and darker. And I just thought it was like a cool visual effect. And I'm like, oh, now I can't see where I'm jumping. And there's still 15 things flying at me, and I need to jump away, but I can't tell if that's a bottomless pit or a platform down there. Guess I gotta wait, or just, you know, take a leap of faith. And sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't. But yeah, a lot of them were more of like sources of frustration than like, oh, that's neat.
I'll devil's advocate this a little bit. Not in the sense that I disagree with you guys in like, yes, like Mario does this in a different way that's like, it complements Mario, you know, compliments the way it plays. Like, yes, I agree with that. But I do think that for the most part, they were short-lived enough that they never got too frustrating to me. And I kind of appreciated this, like, level of challenge in, like, yeah, like, the wind-changing one. If that were, became a mechanic throughout the rest of the game, I would be very annoyed. But, like, it's just, like, this one level where I have to think about it this way. Like that was kind of cool. Same thing with the dark... the like lightning one where it's like dark and, you know, the dynamic lighting one. I'm like, it's annoying maybe, but like I actually found it kind of cool because it's like adding this level of difficulty that's not just like, oh, because the enemies got harder, and it like makes me feel like a ninja because I have to think about like, what did I see there? Can I jump to that in the dark? I gotta think, like, the difficulty comes from me being like, I gotta try and take a snapshot of this environment and like use my ninja skills to like jump around in the dark. And like that felt kind of fun to me. And even like the ice, like the ice, I think, is the best example of one that like doesn't do, like, you know, the ice in a Mario world, like or at least in Mario 3, like, that, like, gives you this ability to be, like, I can use the physics and, like, the speed that I've learned while playing this game to like, my advantage because of the ice, and, like, you know, and it might be harder, but it can also be, like, much more satisfying. And, like, maybe the ice level doesn't do that here, but, like, it still is, like, okay, I'm a ninja, and I gotta, like, adapt to this new environment. It's, like, harder now in this way. Like, I came into this, like, really, I really liked these dynamic environments. I thought they really added something to the game. Like, where it's the thing that I'm like, wow, like, they did do something that, like, added from the last game without over-changing the formula, you know?
Yeah, where I agree with you is on, like, something like the train level. So it's harmless. It does introduce a side-scrolling, like, mechanic. But, you know, it doesn't affect really the gameplay loop, and it doesn't put the player on a negative scale. I'd appreciate things like that. And don't get me wrong, I'm glad that the game didn't wind up making a situation where it's like, you know, oh, Ryu goes into people's houses now and has dialogue with them to move the story along, and you have to try to find keys or something like that. Like, I'm glad that these are the kind of level changes, and that it's not outright gameplay changes. Like, I'm glad that they mostly just took Ninja Gaiden 1 and tried to plus it up. And so, yeah, like, you know, do I hate all of those dynamic environments? No, I just kind of wish, whether it was through Ryu's ninja powers or through the level design, like the ice one, and I hate to keep harping on it, but, like, I wish that there was a way that, like, if you knew that level, like, you could actually, like, skate through it, right? Like, you could breeze through it faster because you know the path or whatever. And so it's good to be slippery when you know what's going on, and it's bad to be slippery when you're not sure where the pitfalls are, right? Like, that would have been something that's more rewarding. And that probably is more rewarding to the speedrunner, but it's not incredibly obvious to the player. Whereas in a Mario game, You learn those mechanics very fast, right? There's a lot of people in the world that are good at Mario games.
Yeah, I guess I'm just seeing it as, like, a different... It's trying to do... maybe not trying, but, like, I feel like it does something different that... Not necessarily worse, but different than what Mario was trying to do, you know? And, like, I'm not trying to just be a contrarian, but, like, the train one was, like, maybe the only one I wasn't, like... impressed with, because, like, I felt like it was just a background. It didn't actually change any gameplay, you know? It was cool. I was impressed with, like, oh, this is a cool environment, but it wasn't until, I think, the wind one where I was finally like, oh, this is actually making me think differently about how I'm approaching this level.
And I think it's all a fair point.
I disagree.
Well, and I don't want to be contrarian, that. But that's all, it's all to the contrary.
The ninja powers, anybody want to touch on these? Anything, like, you know, I think Sean mentioned their most useful ability is when you pair them up with the clones to kind of create these additional spreads. I do hate just how limited these things are, though, based on your, what is it, like, there's something you collect. It's similar to the hearts in Castlevania.
Yeah, it's some kind of, like, energy. I didn't really know how it worked, but...
You just don't get to use it that often, and it has a cap on top of it. Like, I feel like the cap should go away at the least.
There's the cap. There's the fact that most of them are kind of the same thing, but in, like, different diagonals, which is useful. It's just, I mean, in certain ways. So, like, I never really paid attention to which one I had. I don't know. Maybe I would have been better at this game if I'd have actually been paying attention. But, you know, you spam them during bosses if you've got the right direction. There's one where you kind of summon this fire circle and you're kind of invincible for a while, and that's fun. And then, like, if you've got all of your clones, like, now you're just this, like, conga line of destruction. But, yeah, other than that, I didn't really think about them too much.
Yeah, I wish that there was... Yeah, more than just that directional thing. Like, the one you just mentioned was the one where I'm like, yeah, okay, wow, this is different and it's cool. That little, like, that little shield that comes around you and your crew. But yeah, like, there's throwing stars, yeah, which all go straight forward. Then there's, like, fire that goes up in diagonal, and then fire that goes down in diagonal, which I just feel like the fire that goes up in diagonal is, like, 90% of the time way more useful than the one that goes down in diagonal because you're usually below enemies.
It does feel good to, like, just kind of slam dunk on somebody, but it's never the most, like, efficient use of your time.
Yeah.
Somehow, Ninja Gaiden 2 has even better cutscenes than what we saw in Ninja Gaiden 1, something we praised heavily, but I just don't know how they're squeezing the fidelity. Like, these cutscenes, I can't be the only one thinking that they kind of almost, they look Super Nintendo in a way. And obviously, like, they're doing it by using a very small portion of the screen, but to their advantage, that kind of looks like it's filmed in 235:1 aspect ratio or something. So
well, it's more like 471.
Yeah, exactly. It's so thin, but I guess that allows them to really increase the, you know, the palette or resolution or whatever, because it really looks great. And, you know, this is a game, just like the first one, that you can play oblivious to the plot and it doesn't matter, right? Like, you're just going into the levels and you don't need any context for why you're doing anything. You're just a ninja who moves from left to right. There's no story plot points to collect or dialogue to use later. There's no payoff like that. It's just telling, I'm going to call it an interesting story. It's not the greatest video game story of all time, but it's definitely more thought out
than 99% of the games you played. Yeah. I liked it, and I liked that, you know, yes, it's very separate from the gameplay, but not the most separate. Like, you approach a tower and then you're like, oh, I gotta climb the tower. And lo and behold, the predominant, like, movement, you're going from, like, screen to screen in this level is vertical, upwards. And then there's one like, oh, you gotta go, hey, I'm American, I got a gun. You gotta go down into the thing to go get Irene. I don't know if, like, Irene was, like, a doppelganger before, but, like, the evil dude was her or was behind her. I can't tell. But he went down. So then in this level, you're going to go predominantly down. So, you know, there's something there.
Yeah, it's contextual, I guess. Yeah. But I am just like, I don't even like, I did like, I'll admit, I kind of stopped following the plot after a while because there's just like so many twists and turns. But I am mind blown by like some of the like that shot. I think it's the tower you're talking about, Sean, the shot where like Ryu is like hanging on a cliff. And, like, the camera, like tilts.
That's
in.
A full-screen shot, too. It's
beautiful,
not just
yeah. And I think maybe it's because there's so few colors in the palette that they're still able to make it look so good. But, like, yeah, that is like pushing the NES to its limits. I just posted it in the chat if you guys want to make sure we're talking about the exact same picture.
Yeah, it's a vibe, yeah. Too. It's, like, it's just cool as, like, honestly, that's, like, desktop wallpaper stuff.
Yeah, I might do that right now, actually.
There you go. And you know that they care about the plot because there's 6 pages in the manual dedicated to the story, and it's not even the story for this game. It's the recap of what happened in the first one. Literally, they give 6 pages to what happened in the events of Ninja Gaiden 1, and the last paragraph just kind of sets up where the main menu of Ninja Gaiden 2, like, kicks off. So it's really like they want you to be invested in this, and they are certainly thinking of they know that they're going to release a third game and everything. They want you to think of these as blockbuster action flicks
for sure. And I mean, like, I think we've definitely been given it the short stick. Like, they actually have character design here. Like, there's actual personality for each character. They may be like caricatures, but they still have that personality. And I'm used to playing these freaking cookie cutter shmups where they're like, oh, you're the last Zorblaxian and you have to kill all the evil Zardnaxes. It's 5,000 years in the future, by the way, and we all live underground now. And then it just like lets you do it. And whereas this one actually has a plot and the art seems to be good enough to be in an anime, so I'm a big fan.
Yeah, there's, I mean, there's even those like other games like Bionic Commando or like I think Metal Gear kind of did it too, where it's like, yeah, there's all these characters, but they say like three words, and then like the NES starts to like crash or like smoke because of like the amount of dialogue on screen. It's like, this has like literally like, this is like, yeah, this is like a manga, like.
And I think whether you pay attention to the story or not, Ryu as a character is just kind of those like, that's a cool character, like just from the way he controls in the game, and then additionally the way he behaves in the story. Like that's an early cool video game character, and probably one of the remaining holdouts of like, that guy belongs in Smash Brothers. It, you know, like yeah. I really think that maybe instead of the 14th Fire Emblem character, we could have got Ryu instead.
He's not in Smash Brothers. I thought everybody was here.
No.
They say everybody's here, Joe, but Lolo's not even in Smash Brothers. God. That's my second Lolo reference of the day. Speaking of weird references, in Ninja Gaiden 1, to get the power-ups or the energy things or just random points, you had to destroy lanterns and candles that were built into the stages. And that kind of made sense and, again, felt very Castlevania-y. In this game, you are just defeating various cool spot, you know, that mascot for 7-Up back in the 90s, like the red circle. He's just everywhere, and you just defeat him over and over again to unlock the energy and power-ups. And, I mean, I don't know if you guys know Cool Spot or not.
Yeah, of course I know Cool Spot. I played the game.
I do know what you're talking about. I didn't know his name was Cool Spot, but I...
But, you know, that's him, right?
No,
like, that looks exact. Yeah.
Like, it's obviously a 99 Lift Balloons reference.
There you go. Okay. I missed the German connection in the game, but I'm sure that was covered in the plot.
I think it is on the third page.
But I'm just saying, like, why change something like that to these red circles just don't even fit in with the level anywhere. You know, it's not like, oh, those are my quarters I dropped on the train. Like, you know, they're just there, and they're littering your screen, and they're covering up some nice design work. So why bother?
I don't know. It's a good, I did think that was sort of weird. But I didn't really give it too much thought.
Yeah, I'll be honest, this whole section exists for me to mention Cool Spot.
I'm really glad that you did, though.
Yeah, me too. I forgot about Cool Spot.
Do you remember in the video game where, like, you start off sort of, like, surfing on a 7-Up bottle, and then the game starts and you kind of forget everything else that happened?
Yeah, it made me really want a nice, cold 7-Up.
Yeah. What happened to 7-Up, by the way?
7-Up's still around, I think.
Still there, yeah.
It is?
Cherry 7-Up is the definitive 7-Up. Mm. But
well, that's,
I would say
that's categorically false, but
that's not true. Cherry 7-Up is like actually linked into my DNA.
I do like 7-Up, but I would go Cherry over.
I mean, I would
I'm
go Mountain
saying,
Dew
I'm
over
not saying
any
that's
7-Up.
Good. I mean, I'm not saying that the original's better. I'm just saying, if you're talking about like an iconic look, like it's green. It has to be green.
Yeah, why'd they make Sprite white now?
What's up with that?
That's too political for this.
What about Starry? Now they got rid of Sierra Mist, and now it's Starry.
I don't like
Sierra Mist.
Oh
yeah, 15-year run.
The lemon lime soft drink war has taken some weird turns.
Yeah, I feel like nobody's even paying attention to it now that there's the chicken sandwich war.
It's true.
Anyway, the even though it's not lemon lime, Squirt is the way to go.
Squirt's not lemon lime.
No, it's grapefruit.
Oh, shit.
Getting back to the plot of Ninja Gaiden for a minute. We can go back to Lemon Lime after this. In Ninja Gaiden 1, you defeated, I believe his name was Jacquio?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, you defeated him, and so in Ninja Gaiden 2, turns out there's an even bigger bad, and his name is Ashtar, and he's gonna plunge the world into darkness with the Sword of Chaos, blah, blah, blah. It's all good stuff, trust me. But that's just actually a psych out. Ashtar, you wind up fighting as the level 5 boss, and you think you've beat the game, but then it is revealed that Jacquio has never, like, no, nobody's gone forever, right? And so he returns and he becomes the level 6 boss. And I'm wondering, you know, I'm sure this isn't the first video game to do this, but can you guys think of another time where it was like the big bad isn't the final bad? Yeah, I know that becomes a trope later on in JRPGs, but I don't think we've experienced it yet. You know, I like that they set up, you know, you think that you've beaten the game and it's like, nope, whole new level coming at you.
You mean, okay, you're just talking about like on the NES, or you mean in general?
Yes, on the NES. Yeah, I mean, you can bring up other examples because, I mean, you know, we all know there's plenty. I just thought that, you know, I was like, huh, I'm making note of this as the first time I'm seeing this happen on the show.
I guess I haven't seen it on the NES.
I feel like we've had, like, it's not the same, but we've had, like, things where you beat the final boss and then there's still, like, a level or two of, like,
oh, yeah. Bossless, what, like, what was escape. The game where, like, you... Oh, wait, was it Double Dragon? Where, like, you beat the dude, but then you gotta, like, fight the other dude, but maybe
you gotta fight yourself, yeah.
Yeah.
Your brother.
But then there was also, I forgot this. I did this like on a recent episode. Also, you love this game, Sean. We all like this game, but you really liked it. It's a it's not cyber something. It's a.
I don't remember any of the games.
It's
dude.
Blaster.
Blaster Master.
Yes. Didn't in that one? Didn't you like beat the boss, but then you still have to like escape, or like you have to like.
Do... Okay, but yeah, oh, but no, escaping escaping is not else. The same thing. Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Like I mean, it's not the same Z thing. It's just the closest thing I can think of.
Not Section
yeah.
Z.
Yeah, but that's like saying like after Luke blows up the Death Star, like yeah, it's crazy that they continued the movie. You know, it's like no, it's not. Like,
the final boss is those medals that they get at the end. He's got to get the medal, and Chewbacca lost.
Yeah, I mean, we all know George Lucas has another cut that he's never going to share with us, where they drop the medals,
right?
Or maybe, you know, maybe they didn't film that and he's going to CGI it into the movie.
Well, yeah, the medals part was fixed in the edit. You know, everyone said like that whole medals thing wasn't working and then they fixed it in the edit.
I believe you.
But let's be real. Ashtar, Jacquio, like none of us got to these guys, right?
No, I didn't.
No, I got to the ice level.
I was midway through the fourth level where I just like, nope, don't have... I just don't have the endurance for this anymore.
Yeah, I game genied into these levels to make sure I could experience them, and I could say with near 100% certainty that I am not ready to take on Ashtar, let alone Jacquio. Like, these bosses are just, again, like, you need the shadows. The clones. You need those guys, because there's just too much going on. Like, they deal too much damage. You don't have enough health. Something's got to give. I'd hate to say that I wish that they put in a cheese way to get through these bosses, but there needs to be something other than just like get good for me to enjoy the games. I totally understand that there are people out there who love that stuff and are determined to beat all three Ninja Gaiden games on the NES on the original hardware. Power to you. I don't got the time for that. All right, so moving into the sequels and spinoffs, I think we covered these, so I'm just going to say real fast, all the twos in the Ninja Gaiden series. Ninja Gaiden 2 was also, without the Dark Sword of Chaos, just Ninja Gaiden 2, was released for the Xbox 360, and that is the, you know, it's not like these Ninja Gaiden games, it's more of a action combat Devil May Cry proto-style game. Those are punishingly hard as well, though, and I've never played them, but in watching a playthrough, they look awesome, but I gotta imagine it's because the player who's recording the long play is just good at the games. Like, I imagine it takes
a lot
of skill.
Yeah, it's like a spectacle fighter thing.
Yeah, like, it looks awesome, I just don't believe in myself enough to pull this off.
Yeah, I think I played one... I can't remember if it was the first or second of, like, the Xbox 360 versions, but I was not good at them. But they look cool.
Yeah, I talked about this on the Discord for our Patreon members, but like as somebody who just recently started like dabbling in these Souls games, I just know that like I don't have the ability. Like I kind of wish I did, but I'd much rather use my time to play some really obscure simulator game where I'm managing a F1 franchise, because apparently that's something I've always wanted to do. I'd rather waste my time there than learn to be a great ninja. And then there's Ninja Gaiden Shadow for the Game Boy, which actually turns out to be a prequel to the original Ninja Gaiden. It is 1985, 3 years before the events of the NES game, and Jacquio has not yet been awakened. However, the Emperor, an evil dictator, threatens New York City, and it is up to Ryu to fight him. Now, that doesn't tell me what kind of game this is, but I'll just tell you it's basically just like the best the Game Boy can do to emulate the style of these NES games. But again, like it's so much about the plot, you know, like they're building it as a prequel to the first game. So it's like, did people care that much back then? Like they were like, oh, I got to be completionist. Like I got to make sure I know the whole story going into the trilogy. I suppose so.
I think that it like it's just playing in on like a its own playground, you know, like there's no competition for this kind of heavy story. So like if that's what you want, like this is where you're going, at least for this style of like manga-ish action-y heavy story. Like maybe there's some JRPGs and stuff with heavy story, but like I don't know. I think it's like, yeah, it seems like it's the only one of its kind right now that you can go to. And I'm watching this Game Boy prequel and like very impressive just how the cutscenes look on the Game Boy too. It's like the Game Boy's capable of this. Like it's pretty cool.
I just need to do like a quick aside, and I just gotta say there has to be a different pronunciation of Jacquio. Like it sounds ridiculous.
Jacquio.
Is it maybe Jacquio. Like Jacquio or like Jackiao? Like it just sounds, it feels wrong, but
I'll allow it for now.
Yeah, I'll allow it for now.
That's why I just haven't said it this whole time.
Yeah, I'm not.
Like, I'm not getting it wrong.
While we're talking about stories in video games and everything, here's a hot take. If anybody ever asks you, like, hey, do I need to play these four games before I play this one? The answer is always no.
Always?
Right?
For like, any
like,
game?
For any game, like you don't need to like it should always be about the gameplay first. You shouldn't need like the Yakuza games, for instance. Like, yeah, they're all connected and everything, but you don't need to know what happened in 1, 2, 3, and 4 to play 5.
But I'm trying to optimize my enjoyment and to optimize. I need
But those games are like 80 hours. You got to play 80 hours times 5 now just to play the newest entry. I think that's crazy. Do you think people have to play Halo 5, do they have to play Halo 1, 2, 3, 4, ODST, Reach? Like, I don't think so.
I think it depends on what the game is. Like, you know, there are some games where I do think story is as important as the gameplay. Like Uncharted or The Last of Us. Like, I wouldn't say jump into The Last of Us 2 without playing The Last of Us 1. You know, but like, that's the kind of game they are. This game, definitely, you're right. Like, you know, you don't need to play the first one to play the second one.
But Joe, I think people would have just as good of a time as we did with Kingdom Hearts 3 if Kingdom Hearts 3 was their first Kingdom Hearts
game.
But
it sounds like you guys didn't like that game.
Yeah, exactly. I think they would get the same enjoyment.
I think people would have a much better time with Kingdom Hearts 3 if they didn't care about the story at all. But
right. I guess, you know what, you're kind of right with The Last of Us, but still, I think that like there is something to just be said about like video games primarily being enjoyed for the agency it gives you to do something that you can't do in real life, and not the movie that you've been dying to watch, right?
Yeah, I mean, it also depends on what you're in it for, too, because you could totally, if you don't care about the plot, play The Last of Us 2, because the best thing about that game is the gameplay, and it's really, really good gameplay, in my opinion.
Okay, I just want to put it to another thing. Like, we were talking before this episode about, like, you know, the whole, like, compilation of Final Fantasy VII. Would you recommend someone just play Crisis Core? And I've never played it, by the way. I'm asking the people that have.
You know what, though? It was interesting. It would work, because Crisis Core is technically a prequel to everything.
Sure.
So it wouldn't matter.
Okay.
Like, you don't need to know.
I guess that's true.
But I wouldn't recommend anybody start on Crisis Core because they'd be like, this is what people love about Final Fantasy games?
I mean, again, it's like, it comes down to your preference. Like, I think that there are games that the story is as heavily weighted as the gameplay, and I think most Final Fantasy games are among those. I mean, luckily, Final Fantasy games are, you know, anthologies, so it doesn't matter. You don't have to play one to play 14, but, you know, I personally, in those kinds of games, I weight the story and the like production of the story and the way the story is told as highly as like the gameplay. But I mean, there are games that I don't, and there are games that I think like, well, yeah, definitely this is a gameplay first game. And then there are people who don't agree with that. Like, it's just, I think it just comes down to preference.
Wrapping up the sequels and spinoff section, Ninja Gaiden Sigma 2, which is just really, I know, right? It's like, how many more qualifiers do you need on that? Ninja Gaiden Sigma 2 and Knuckles.
He's just grinding
and
at
Knuckles,
that point.
Like from Sonic?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. that was on PlayStation Vita and is basically just like, hey, you guys all like those new Ninja Gaiden games on Xbox? Well, the Vita's got a handheld version, so enjoy it. And it is kind of like the Crisis Core of the Ninja Gaiden remake series, if you can believe that, Sean, because it's just like, it's mission-based stuff, not necessarily like a grand, you know, it's not as large as the main games.
I see.
And last, and weird that I saved this for last, you can play Ninja Gaiden 2 on the Super Nintendo in the Ninja Gaiden Trilogy, which was released for the Super Nintendo, which is no different than what we're all imagining right now, Super Mario All-Stars, right?
Yeah.
It's just, here's the three games,
is
now they're
like
on Super Nintendo.
Stuff?
With, no, 16, yeah, brand new graphics
oh,
and everything,
cool.
and worse controls. Apparently, I mean, I didn't play it, but apparently they made decisions about how things work and, you know, the way they upgraded the game. Everybody just kind of agrees that you just don't touch this trilogy on the Super Nintendo. Yeah, that's weird, and we'll have to find out why, but maybe in a Bytes episode, since those are now lawless episodes that can be about anything.
The Wild West.
Yeah, Joe, last time we did a Bytes episode, I don't know if you were there or not, but it was... I think you were. Yeah, it wasn't even an NES game
anymore.
Yeah,
it was
MSX game, yes.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, and that's it for the sequels and spinoff section. So the last section is a little something I call the Essential Games List. I think Ninja Gaiden 1, which is an essential game, and Ninja Gaiden 2 are both really good games and honestly probably equal in quality. Ninja Gaiden 2 has a little more level design going on. 2, in my opinion, its fault with the dynamic levels not necessarily helping the player and the later levels being a bit claustrophobic. But I think it, even though that gives it a more complete feel than the first game, you're able to climb the walls again, something that when I went back to the first game, I was kind of like, oh yeah, you couldn't do this? Like, that felt so obvious. How did they not program that? And the clones are a cool upgrade, but again, they're just kind of like a new power up. They don't actually make the game feel that much better. I think I just prefer at this point the simpler approach of the whole like ninja action. Like, I think I felt more like a badass ninja kicking butt when there was less enemies, less things happening on the screen, and I was more like in control. Maybe I just progressed further, so I like that too. Who knows what biases I have, but those biases are what's leaning me to say that Ninja Gaiden 1, still totally valid on the Essential Games List. Ninja Gaiden 2, while not necessarily a downgrade, is just less what I wanted going off of Ninja Gaiden 1, and for me would just, like, it'd just be slightly under it. If I gave Ninja Gaiden 1 a 90... or a 9 out of 10, I'd give Ninja Gaiden 2 an 8 out of 10. And for that reason, it's not going to go on the Essential Games List for me. Joe?
So I'm going to bring it full circle to kind of what I said at the beginning of this game about how, like, I don't mind these... I guess I was sort of trying to set myself up for this in the end because I wanted to be able to explain my decision here. But, like, I think that there... that, like, having an iterative sequel like this is not a negative thing, and I know that nobody is saying it is, but like I think this is a conversation we've had other times, and I think I've even been on the other side of this this opinion in the past with other games. But like, I guess I'm rambling to say that I think that there is room for both of these games on the essential games list, even if they're like similar. I had personally, from what I remember, just as much, if not more, fun, but at least as much fun with this game. So I think it deserves it as much as Ninja Gaiden 1. I think both of these games are incredible, and I think that they both belong on the essential games list. Despite, yes, some flaws that we have with this one, I do recognize those, but I think that the pros outweigh the cons.
Sean.
Yeah, this is a tough one because I feel like the main emotion that I felt while playing this game was frustration, but the main emotion that I feel when I think about this game is really positive, you know, especially with all the cool cutscenes, and I've been known to like a difficult game. And but like, I still had a more negative experience than I really think I should have. And maybe this is just like, you know, maybe that's where my head's at. Maybe I need to come back to this at a later date. But right now, I felt too much of that frustration to really say that it's an essential game for me. Because the problems that I was having just seemed so like fundamental to the game. That said, it's sort of in the same vein as what Mike was saying, where it's like, oh, if this one was a 90, this is an 80, or what have you. But I just don't know if it's crossed that threshold for me. So I'm going to unfortunately cast the deciding vote in to keep it off the essential games list for now.
All right, and so it's not on the essential games list. You know, this was probably the one that I was voting no, but was also like totally fine if it got on the essential games list, which is like a weird thing to say. But there are times where, like, you know, I vote no, and I hope you guys go along. And this time I was like, yeah, they do what they want. Like, it's not. I felt my own biases going into the vote, which is something that I feel like shouldn't really bleed in there. But hey, that's the show, right? It's the you're voting on.
It's the Mike essential show.
No, it's the essential games list according to these three dudes, right? Like, we can never make the one that's specific for each of you listeners. And so I guess, like, you know, it's totally fine that my biases slipped in there. But that's my problem, right? Is like, I can't actually tell you which one is better because I feel like some people will enjoy, not even just the, you know, the harder difficulty or the ability to climb walls, right? Like, some people might just enjoy the overall, like, presentation of two more than one, whereas some people might say, like, I got what I needed out of one and two was just unnecessary additions, you know? Like, that's totally possible. And that happens with any franchise. So we definitely have much to discuss if Joe wants us to revisit this in the Best of 1990 episode. As you might have caught on through the episode, if you listened to the entire episode, I mentioned a few things such as a Patreon and a Discord that I talk to people on and a Bytes, whatever that was. Those are all things related to our Patreon page, patreon.com/nostalgia, where for just a buck a month, you can get access to the Discord, where we have a very lively chat about not just the NES hardware, but all things video games, and even a off-topic thread that really gets off-topic. It gets kind of nutty in there. But if that sounds cool to you, if you want to get nutty with us, right? If you're a squirrel looking for your nut, come on and get it at the off-topic section on the Nostalgia Discord for just a buck. And there's no commitment. I'm not making people sign 70-year contracts at 10-year contracts at $70 million AAV. Like, that's not, you're not the Shohei Ohtani of this podcast. It's going to be fine. But you're the Shohei Ohtani of my heart. And so I want you to know that whether or not you sign up for the Patreon, we are still going to keep doing episodes like future episodes, Remote Control next week, Adventures in the Magic Kingdom the week after that, and a game that I'm sure maybe seven of our listeners have heard, a game called Arkista's Ring. This game I've never seen in anything that I've ever looked at. where I, you know, sometimes you see the box art and you're like, oh, it's that game. Even the box art to me is like, is this official? Like, we're supposed to just be playing the licensed games. So let's see what Arquista's Ring is all about. And if Arquista's Ring is a great game, let me know ahead of time.
So, guys, question. When I mentioned how I went back and listened to just part of the original Ninja Gaiden episode, I just listened to our Essential Games List vote, and I'm a little confused, and I'm wondering if you guys remember what was going on here. Because we all voted. Sam was involved as well. The four of us voted. It was obviously voted essential. And then there's like another like almost 10 minutes after the vote where just, you know, doing the general talking. But Mike, you say something about like how, just so you know, like if it sounds like we knew what was going to happen, it's because we already did. And there was an alternate version of this episode in which things, you know, it was the incorrect timeline and we voted it not essential. Which like sounds like some bantery thing we would normally do, but it sounded very serious. Like it wasn't a joke. I mean, we were laughing about it.
You just gave
it,
me chills, Joe. Like, I don't.
But yeah. Well, then also I noticed that like for the whole everything after the Essential Games List, it's just you and Sean. Like, we don't mention it, but like me and Sam either are just being very quiet or are like literally not there. So like I don't know if like we couldn't record and you guys had to re-record something or we did, but like we talked about it. We were like, oh, maybe one day we'll release the original version of this episode. I don't remember any of it.
I don't know
what was going on there.
In my never-ending quest to get the Essential Games List the way I think it should be, I have had to acquire the Infinity Stones and travel through the multiverse in order to find the ones where you guys vote the games accordingly.
But so, see, I can't. I don't think there was a. I don't think there's a universe. Where
you're not
I didn't
even gonna let me
vote.
Make my Archon joke before I.
No Archon jokes.
I can explain this actually. I think if I recall correctly, something did happen with the audio file, and you are correct at the very least that me and Sean did a pickup record after the fact, but there was never a different vote. I think that was just me.
Okay.
I think that was just me referring to the fact that me and Sean were
in a different
were
space
recording
and time.
Again. Yeah, at a different space
yeah,
and
good.
Time.
Yeah, cover it up.
Yeah, no, that's not what it is. Because look, those are the votes, right? I didn't. You didn't not say it, right, Joe? It's not AI.
I mean, no, that's what I
would. We didn't have good AI
verified.
In 2019. Now we do.
AI was that episode where I didn't realize that I had already played that dodgeball game. Right. That was when we used AI, Joe.
Joe, if you want a real deep cut for the listeners, though, I will give them this treat, and that is go back, listeners who are this engaged in the show, go back and listen to the Back to the Future episode of this podcast. Because that was the episode, let me get the number for people, Back to the Future was episode 212. That was the episode where I first got my new microphone, where everybody was like, oh, it's new mic, like he doesn't sound like he's talking out of a tin can. And some people were even like, oh, I missed the old mic. But this mic wasn't using his new mic when we recorded Back to the Future. And so I had to transcribe everything, re-record my lines on my own, and then insert them into the episode.
And you didn't tell us.
And
you
I didn't tell you
us.
Because I couldn't take that risk. I couldn't take that risk.
And I was QCing the episode, and I remember thinking, like, someone just sounds really weird. But, like, I was like, whatever, it just sounds weird. And then you told us about it later, like months later. And I was like, oh, my God, that makes so much sense now.
Yep, so the Back to the Future episode was really me going back to the past to change the future of this podcast so that people know I have a good microphone.
Well, I think that there was a period in time when back when your mic was bad that I think that there was a moment where I had the best quality audio, and it was short-lived, but like I don't know what happened. I'm still using the same mic. I'm surrounded by soft blankets and padding, but I sound horrible these days. I'm hoping this episode was better than the last few episodes we've been having, but I cannot get myself to sound good.
And since we're on a deep cuts train here, I will say that episodes 26 and 27 of season 3, that is episodes 62 and 63, Load Runner and Raid on Bungling Bay, those two episodes are actually ones where the entire record got corrupted and we all had to re-record, but we were all present. It wasn't like, yes, I took some of the old files and some of the new files. That is just something that is kind of funny to think about, that we pretended yeah. like we were doing them for the first time, because it would just be embarrassing to acknowledge yeah. that we had to record twice.
I think there were also at least two episodes where I was there, but my recording didn't work, and you were able to just, like, work it so, like, you and Sean's audio was still there, and you just cut out a few lines, and, like the whole episode was still, like, I had been talking, but, like, it didn't record, and we still made it sound like I just wasn't there.
Yeah, hold on, I can get that episode as yeah. well. So that episode...
One of them might have been a Bites.
Yeah, it was the Game Boy episode and Chess Master.
That is... Yeah. So that's pretty insane that we yeah. that we worked around... Right. A third of a conversation.
Yeah. Like, go back and listen to it, see if there's anything that they're, like, responding to, where you're like, wait, why are they saying that? Probably
definitely,
something that I said.
Definitely listen to the Chess Master episode, because if I recall, Joe wasn't really that familiar with chess, and so you didn't say much to begin yeah. with. But I definitely didn't just, like, trim you out and trim out any time we said Joe. I trimmed out, like, entire sections that just no longer worked because you said something meaningful. Yeah.
But I feel like I actually might have been familiar with chess at that point. I can't
no, you were. I'm joking. I'm saying
oh, okay.
that, like...
No, you know, because I before I just started... I just learned chess, like, you know, very recently, relatively recently. But I was like, I don't know how I could have played Chess Master if I wasn't familiar with chess. Like,
right.
It would be impossible.
All right. Sean, any secret episodes you want to tell the listeners about?
No, I love hearing about these things because I just have zero memory for any of it.
Yeah, actually, this whole episode you've been talking about how people are going to think you have, like, short-term memory loss or something, or long-term memory loss, because this whole episode you've been saying that you don't remember anything.
I don't remember my childhood. I don't remember. I know who you guys are, like, in theory, but I don't remember, like, any, like, in-person conversations that we had. I don't know where we met. I don't know, like, where I am, like... Now.
Well, that's because you're actually not on this episode, and we have just lifted bites from the Deadly Towers episode and made it sound like you were talking about Ninja Gaiden this whole time for an hour and 12 minutes.
Is this like a Soma situation where, like, I just sort of, I find out that, spoilers for Soma, I'm actually just like an AI recreation of my past self?
It's time to wake up, Mr. Sean.